What's up, everybody, and welcome back. UFC 300 just wrapped, and one of the most historic nights in UFC history, and obviously with the Holloway versus Gaethje performance, which we're going to talk more about later. One of the greatest fucking moments in UFC history, one of the greatest fights in UFC history. So, man, just an overall good night of fights. But yeah, kicking things off was Cody Garbrandt versus Davison Figueiredo. I really felt like Cody did a good job throughout the first round, right? He kind of staved off some of the takedown attempts from Figueiredo. He did a good job of scrambling, was working his calf kicks in. But once Figueiredo was able to get it to the ground in the second round, man, it was just, it was over from there. And once he got to Cody's back, sunk in the rear naked choke. And that's the thing that I was a little bit nervous about going into this fight, is that Figueiredo had a little bit of trouble keeping Rob Font held down. And you saw that in the first round with Cody. He had a little bit of trouble getting Cody on the ground, keeping him there. And I kind of thought that's how the fight would play out. But he was able to cement that control. And like I said, get to the back and choke Cody out. So he's looking more and more like he belongs in this 135-pound weight class. And we'll see who they match him up against next. It feels like he's going to be on the rise here, up through the rankings. He's obviously going to get a higher-ranked opponent. And, man, kind of a shame for Cody because it felt like he had just righted the ship. He's back on track. He's fighting this guy who just moved up into the division. And like I said, got off to a really good start in the first round, but, man, just wasn't able to overcome the grappling of Davison Figueiredo as the fight continued to drag out. So good performance from Cody, like I said, to start, but Davison Figueiredo proving that he's going to be a problem. Bobby Green versus Jim Miller was next. This was a good fight, but man, once Bobby kind of got going, he took the fight over. A couple 10-8 rounds thrown in there. He dominated Jim Miller. And if you look at Miller's face at the end of the fight, he was all busted up. This was a fight between two guys who were real veterans in the game, though. I mean, both of these guys had 40-plus professional fights. I think between the two of them coming into this fight, they had 103 combined professional bouts. So they both had the experience, right? But Bobby Green just ended up doing his thing, man. And it was hard for Jim Miller to cover the distance and really get to a takedown or change the fight up at all, right? He kind of had to fight Bobby on his terms. And when Bobby gets in that groove, man, he just kind of dots you up. He carries his hands low. He's coming from weird angles and he's a hard guy to hit. And also, Bobby has that fucking fight against Jalen Turner was obviously hard to watch, but Bobby Green has a pretty good chin, man. He can eat some shots. He's a good fighter, and he just busted Jim Miller up in this fight. Kind of disappointing we didn't get the Jim fucking Miller from Bruce Buffer, right? But I was glad that we got it from Rogan at the end of the night for the baddest motherfucker from Max Holloway, right? At least they got one of those cuss words in there. All right, next, Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez. Rodriguez was looking, as expected, really good on the feet. She was crisp, but the power of Andrade and the wrestling, right? I feel like this was a split decision, but honestly, I kind of thought it was clear cut for Andrade. And Rodriguez won the second round, I felt, but even there, Andrade had her hurt towards the end of that round. So it's like, yeah, Marina dominated in terms of the exchanges and landing the cleaner shots, but Andrade hurt her. And would it be the craziest thing ever if you gave her that second round? I mean, like I said, I personally thought Rodriguez won it and that maybe Andrade had to hurt her a little bit worse because Rodriguez did clinch up with her, negate some damage in the final few seconds, kind of throw her to the side. Like, I don't know. Maybe she wasn't as hurt as it seemed, right? But the shots that Andrade were landing had way more impact. I thought this was a clear-cut victory for Jessica. I thought she definitely won rounds one and rounds three. And like I said, just based on the damage, I thought maybe even round two. But Rodriguez definitely had the cleaner strikes and everything. But yeah, Andrade, she reminds you a lot of Holloway. She's been fighting with the UFC for forever. She's been in the game for forever. She's been fighting professionally since 2011. And she's only 32 years old. So she's really in the prime of her athletic career. Her and Max are kind of in that same boat. Aldo always felt that same way to me too. I mean, I know he's starting to get up there now. But for the longest time, I was like, man, Aldo is not that old. How old is Aldo now? Like 34? 35? Oh, no, he's 37 now. I was going to say, but there was a time there where he just had so many fucking fights and he was still like 32 years old. And you're like, damn, that's how you feel about Andrade and Max Holloway too. But this was a good fight. Like I said, Andrade came out on top. I think we kind of mentioned this in the preview, but that I did on like Instagram. If you guys go follow me there, right? Shameless plug. It's DLo_MMA_show. I did a preview for each of these fights, but Yet her well-roundedness won her the fight. I mean, her ability to wrestle and the power. The power obviously is a big difference maker. Next up on the prelims, Hanada Moicano versus Jalen Turner. And Jalen Turner, super dangerous on the feet. One of the cleanest strikers in the entire division. And he had Hanada Moicano hurt, but he dropped him with a clean left and then just walked off. And it's like, man, even if you think you put him out, you got to hop on it and start finishing that. Especially, you know, when guys like, when Gaethje lands face first and Holloway knocks him out, you're like, all right, yeah, it's kind of over. Like the way he, like, you know, that's a walk-off, right? But when the guy falls to his back and he's looking up at you and Moicano immediately pops back to his feet, that's on Jalen Turner, man. And it makes you wonder what a different fight it could have been, because he obviously stunned Hanada Moicano. But if he would have even hopped on him, and maybe he doesn't get the TKO in the first round, but if he can just hurt him and go back and make Moicano go to his corner with this, like, a little bit of panic, he's trying to recover, he's trying to catch his breath, and it feels like he let him off the hook, and Moicano kind of went back to his corner, probably starting to recover already. He was able to sit down, get his wits about him, and then he came out, and by the way, I was talking shit on Hanada Moicano's wrestling a little bit. Not talking shit, but just saying he usually gets to upper body locks and he hits trips, right? But he ran a double leg on Jalen Turner in the second round. And you got to think, Jalen Turner has fought a guy like Matosh Gamrot in the past. I really thought that was going to be a difference maker here. I thought Turner would do a great job of keeping Moicano off of him. And Moicano, man, just timed that double leg up, got him down, and from there, domination when he got into top position. You got to wonder too, on a card like this, I wonder what the adrenaline dump or what was going on mentally for Jalen Turner after he drops Moicano. Maybe he thinks it's over, and then you realize you still got to fight and that this guy's popping back up to his feet, going into a new round. You know he's going to get a break, you know. So tough position to be in for Jalen Turner, but you gotta. That's why the follow-up shots, like Jorge Masvidal said against Ben Askren, super necessary, man. It's better to go in there and finish your job as opposed to letting the guy off the hook. And look how the tides turned when Moicano came back out. So good fight, but Hanada Moicano looking impressive, man. He's getting some work done at 155 pounds. All right, how about Diego Lopez versus Sadiq Youssef? Diego Lopez is a finisher, man. And you know how dangerous he is on the ground because of all of the submission attempts that he offered against Movsar Evloev. He tapped out Gavin Tucker, right? And he finished Pat Sabatini with strikes. And he kind of did the same thing to Sadiq here. Caught him in one of those weird exchanges. And once he stuns you, man, he ain't letting you off the hook. And if he's able to stun you, he has the ability to get a little bit reckless because he's not afraid of ending up on his back in exchanges. So he can go fucking crazy trying to get after it because he's so confident on the ground. His jiu-jitsu is so high level. And I thought this was going to be a really evenly matched fight. And I think, you know, on paper it was. But Diego Lopez, man, went in there and showed that he's a real fucking problem at 145 pounds. He's going to get a big matchup next. I'm excited to see what the future holds for this kid. Super aggressive. Like I said, again, referencing back to the previews that we did, but like, he does do a good job of keeping his hands up, man. He's disciplined. Like, a lot of the times you see these guys who are really good in one area, like jiu-jitsu, they lack in these other areas. And I'm not seeing that from Diego Lopez. He seems to have, and he just has that finishing ability, right? Like, he has the ability to get guys out of there. That's what makes superstars. And pulling a win like that off on a card like this, right before the Kayla Harrison versus Holly Holm fight, big fucking win for Diego Lopez. He's the man. I'm excited to see what's coming up for him. Speaking of Kayla Harrison versus Holly Holm, that's our next fight. And Kayla Harrison dominated from bell to bell. I mean, there was really only one moment where she maybe got in a little bit of trouble, where she hit the throw on Holly. She got rolled all the way through. Holly ended up on top, but Harrison just worked her way back to the feet, and she put on a fucking clinic. I mean, she dominated Holly Holm. You know, going into this fight, it did make me a little bit nervous, though, just because you would think that in terms of the skill set, Holly Holm would have the advantage on the feet. And that's probably true, right? She probably has more variety, or timing's a little bit better, but Holly's 42. And sometimes when you're just standing in front of somebody that's 33 years old in the prime of their career, strong as fuck, I mean, you can tell that Kayla Harrison is super strong. It can be hard to hold your ground in those moments. And also, Holly's adopted a pretty wrestling-heavy approach over the last few years. She's pinning girls up against the cage a lot, trying to work takedowns. And when those don't work out, man, you saw what happened. You saw the result of that. When you get somebody who's superior in that department, that game plan, it doesn't work so well anymore. And Holly's been finished recently. I just thought that the things were trending in the wrong direction for her coming into this fight, and things were trending the right way for Kayla Harrison. But this was a statement win for her. And depending on what's going on with Amanda Nunes, you know she's retired, but after a performance like that, I don't know. But you got Raquel Pennington holding the title, obviously, but are you more excited to see Kayla Harrison versus Raquel or Kayla Harrison versus like Amanda Nunes right now even? So I would guess that what would happen is Kayla Harrison fights Raquel. And if Kayla's able to win, maybe that's what gets Amanda Nunes out of retirement and we set up a super fight between these two. But the title feels within grasp for Kayla Harrison, right? I think she can do it. Based on that performance, she looked really fucking good. You don't get a much better UFC debut than that. All right, next up, Calvin Kattar versus Aljamain Sterling. And Aljo got a lot of criticism in this one, man, just for like, I feel like it was boring and stretched out a little bit, folks might say, but Cater's a hard guy to finish, right? Sterling is moving up in the weight class for the first time, and he was still able to dominate Calvin Kattar. I mean, the fight really wasn't all that close at all. How many strikes did Kattar land? I think sometimes we get caught up in this, like, yeah, it was boring, and you do want to see him get the finish. I understood completely the point that DC was trying to make, and that, like, if you want to start vying for a title at 145 pounds, You got to make some statements. You got to have some impact wins. And maybe this wasn't an impact win, but it was a dominant win against a top 10 opponent at 145. And it sets Aljamain up for maybe a top 5 opponent next. So he did what he had to do. He looked good doing it. And maybe it wasn't everybody's favorite fight to watch, but I think you got to give props for Aljamain in this fight. He looked great. And I don't think we've ever seen anybody shut Kattar down to that extent. So I understand. Don't get me wrong. I love grappling, and I didn't think it was the most exciting fight, but I did think it was impressive. And I just think that in terms of getting guys out of there, feeling that – you got to remember, Kattar's a big, strong, like, he's a long guy. He's big for that weight. He's a big 145er, right? He's got a long frame. I think Aljo just has to get adapted to being in an actual fight against guys like that, right? So I think he's only going to look better in his next performance, and his striking was on point too. How about all the shots he was landing on Kattar? He was the one pushing the action on the feet. So I thought it was a good performance, and I expect better things from Sterling moving as he continues to fight this better and better competition at 145. All right, Jiří Prochazka versus Alexander Rakic. I said this, I think Jiří Prochazka is the most exciting fighter on the entire UFC roster. Just his style, how dynamic he is, man. He's always bouncing around doing crazy shit, and he doesn't give a fuck. He is just so willing to walk through damage, and he takes massive risks. Like, he's always bobbing, weaving in and out, and you'll see, like, Rakic was landing. I think we also got to give credit to the chin of Jiří Prochazka because he ate some fucking shots in this one. Also, his legs got tore up and he just kept marching forward and eventually ended up knocking Rakic out. But man, it's like he's bobbing, weaving, and he's just barely getting out of the way of some of these strikes that you feel like they could knock him out. But he's so willing to wade into that danger. I think it makes, especially, you know, these bigger guys, they have that crazy knockout power, and when things start escalating in these exchanges, I just think it's more exciting when the guys are bigger and have more power. Jiří has that power. And like I said, say what you want. You can say he's not whatever the same. I don't know. I don't know what, but he embodies that mindset. He is live or die by the fucking sword, right? Like, if he goes out, he's going to go out trying to, like, take you out. You saw it against Pereira. And man, doesn't it make you wonder what would have happened if you maybe let that fight go a little bit more and let Jiří just kind of recover? Maybe his crazy ass could have regained some consciousness, got up and started putting the work on Pereira. Who knows? But this was a great fucking fight, and it maybe a rematch is next for them. I don't know. But you got fucking Pereira talking about moving up to fight Aspinall and stuff like that. But Jiří looked fucking great. And like I said, I think he's the most exciting guy to watch right now in the UFC. Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage. Bo's going to get some heat, unfortunately. And it's the same kind of situation, though. Maybe not as Sterling. Maybe a little bit boring, but still dominant. And you got to realize, Bo was 5-0 going into this. And anytime you change up a rule set, like I understand that Bo is a great collegiate, like NCAA wrestler, right? I understand. And he's going to be able to out-wrestle a lot of guys. But MMA wrestling, you hear it all the time, is different. And anytime you change a rule set just a little bit, you've got all these new parameters to work with, right? There's wrestling up against the cage. You're in a fight where you can strike, so it's more important to like get and stay on top. There are all these different things that factor into it, right? And a good example would be if you watch, like, I think it's Pat Downey versus Gordon Ryan in a wrestling match. He dominates Gordon Ryan. But in terms of a jiu-jitsu match, obviously, Gordon Ryan's going to win most of the time. Right? So you just change the rule set up a little bit and things get a whole lot different. So Nickel, you got to think, was still able to dominate Cody Brundage. But can we slow the talks down about comparing him to Khamzat Chimaev now, though? Because what do you think Khamzat does to Cody Brundage? What do you think Khamzat does to Cody Brundage 2 or 3 years ago when he was making like his UFC debut, whenever it was, 4 years ago? I don't know. But what do you think he does to him? Like, I understand that Bo Nickel is very talented, like I said, in the wrestling department. But I don't think he's on that level that Khamzat's at yet. Just in terms of his MMA grappling. Like, if you watch even when Bo Nickel's behind Brundage trying to break him down, Khamzat's just constantly doing things like attacking the legs, stretching your base out, breaking you down this way, breaking you down that way. And it feels like Bo was struggling a little bit to get Cody Brundage in some of those situations. And I also think that Bo, he gets a little wild on the feet. Like, yes, his striking can be very crisp. He's accurate. But he lunges in with some of the shots. And the way he does it, he leaves himself open. So I think his hands have got – he's got to take a little – when you're a good wrestler, I feel like it always benefits you to take a boxing-style approach. That kind of dynamic striking where you're leaping out and jumping into things, I don't know, man. I don't know how that serves him going down the line. We'll see. We'll see. Fighting is also, you can make these things work for you. Like, if that's his style, maybe he can make it work. Look at Dominic Cruz and what he did with his style for years. But I personally would like to see him bring things in a little bit tighter, take a more boxing heavy approach, like a Dutch kickboxing style almost, where he's boxing a lot and mixing some kicks in and using those strikes to get to his level changes. I feel like the timing and everything on his strikes down to his level changes is still a little bit off. Like, they're kind of synced up. Whereas as he gets better at it, more smooth, he'll let his hands go and then level change off of the strikes, right? And actually threaten with the strikes. So we'll see. I think he has some things to clean up. And as he continues to fight better and better opponents, I think we'll see these larger and larger jumps in his skill set. But I don't know. Just personally watching it last night makes you realize he's not on that level of like world champion yet. It's going to take some time to get him developed. Next up was a fun one between Charles Oliveira and Armand Tsarukyan. I thought this was a super close fight, and it could have went either way, right? I think the difference maker was how you scored round three, because Tsarukyan dominated Oliveira for most of the round, but he also almost got finished in like the last minute. So what do you give more weight to? Oliveira nearly finishing him, but he didn't also. That's the other thing, right, is that he didn't. And Tsarukyan, while he was in danger, he was caught in that choke for a while, and it didn't feel like Oliveira was going to be able to put him out. That was kind of the impression I got. I could be wrong, but it felt like Tsarukyan was able to work himself out of some really danger. How about that guillotine that he got out of? Shorts falling off. He's like fucking – and man, I can't believe he got out of that shit. That was crazy. That was super tight and just a – great job from Tsarukyan of never giving up on himself. You know what else was crazy? I got to talk about this before I forget. He like punched somebody in the fucking crowd. There's an aerial view where you can see him, like you can see down over the top, right? Like there's a view also that ESPN has, the feed from the fight where he's walking out of the tunnel and you can see that he just kind of like looks like he leaned over to hit someone, but then somebody gets an aerial view. You can definitely tell he throws a punch at somebody. So I guess fans must have been talking shit, and he must have been like, watch this, motherfucker. Pop. Threw a punch at him. And you can see on the tunnel view, or the view from ESPN, like the feed or whatever, where it's right in front of him when he's walking out, the people near where he threw the punch, like their hands go to their faces, like they're shocked. And then he does a little flinch at one of the other people. Man, it was crazy. But Tsarukyan, yeah. Getting into it with the fans on the way into the fight. But this was a great performance from him, regardless of how you scored it. I thought it could have gone either way, like I said. Very close fight. And Tsarukyan, man, looks like he might be next in line to to fight the winner of Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier, which was just announced. Huge fight at 155, right? That's going to be massive, and good for Dustin for working his way back up and getting that title shot. And he deserves it after what he did against Benoit Saint-Denis. So that's a huge fight for him. Also, while we're on the topic, Sean Strickland versus Paulo Costa is the co-main on that Islam versus Dustin card. And Conor versus Michael Chandler is announced for June 29th at UFC 303. So some big fights coming up, right? Just had this historic event and some other big ones to look forward to. So, man, good time to be a fight fan. It's felt that way for a while now, but it continues to stay true. All right. I know that we had two fights after this one, but this felt like the fucking main event. And I think the reason it felt like the main event is because I know Pereira is a two-weight world champion, right? Like, he won at middleweight, won at light heavyweight, and he's a star. He beat Israel out of all these things, right? But Max Holloway grew up in the UFC, and Justin Gaethje has really embedded himself into this organization now. So this felt like the main event. Like, and they're both so fucking good. They hardly ever lose, right? And everybody was kind of saying Max was too small. But really, Max beat Justin's ass, man. Like, he beat him up for four rounds. And then obviously knocked him out in the last second. And that was the craziest, the coldest moment in MMA history. I know everybody's saying it, but it's true. I can't think of a colder moment. And for the BMF title, like I said, Max being up four rounds already, he already won the fight. There's no reason for him to go do that against a guy who really can put your lights out, against a guy who really can crack. He had no reason to go do that. He did. And then to land the punch he did in the final second, the final punch that he threw, and to walk off like that, that's the best, one of the best moments, if not the best moment in UFC history. It was incredible. And he was the underdog. Nobody thought that he was going to be able to get in there and bang with Gaethje. And really, when you saw Holloway start landing, he was the one hurting him. And man, I did a breakdown on this one. If you guys want to go back and watch it on the channel, I keep pushing my stuff, right? But it's the spinning kick in the first round that I really think made a difference. Don't get me wrong, Max was winning the first round. But when he landed that kick and broke Justin's nose, everything changed. I think it made Justin a little bit more hesitant to engage, and it allowed Holloway to get his offense going. And man, Holloway is just so good with his attacks and managing the distance. It felt like Gaethje could never get to Holloway, and Holloway was just picking him apart. And like I said, when he would land, it was like Max was the one hurting Justin. He hurt him often in that fight. Often. And Max got dropped in the fourth round. Right? This fight had everything. And you felt like maybe Max was in trouble there. Max has never been dropped in his entire career. He gets hurt, and then he just comes back out in the fifth and starts putting it back on Gaethje. Dominates again. Almost has him finished at like the two-minute mark of that round up against the cage. He's teeing off on him, and it feels like it might get called. Gaethje just continues to fucking suffer through it, and then things end the way they end. And it feels like sometimes when shit like this happens, it's destiny, right? Like, this was supposed to happen. This was the universe at work, and I think Dana White said it perfectly. After this fight, I was yelling so much and fucking like just so emotionally drained that the next two fights were almost like, whew, I was just sitting on the couch like watching it, like entertained, but almost like a zombie. It was crazy. And greatest knockout ever? I don't know, because in the moment, Leon Edwards over Kamaru. He had already lost to Kamaru before. He was getting dominated in this fight for four rounds, and it was to win an undisputed world title. That speech that his coach gave beforehand, I mean, that's up there with the greatest. But in terms of greatest moment, this was one of the greatest moments for the BMF title. And two guys that you know really are bad motherfuckers, Justin Gaethje. Oh, man, what a fight. This was the talk of the night, talk of the card, and for good reason. Max Holloway just cemented himself as a fucking legend. And he's always been good. You've always known he's good. He's one of the best featherweights of all time. And now you know he's going to get Ilia Topuria next. I'll tell you what, man, though, a knockout like that for Justin Gaethje, it makes you a little, I mean, he got knocked out face first on the canvas. And sometimes when you suffer that, he's 35 years old, man, sometimes you never bounce back the same, right? And you saw Justin do this to Tony, and it makes you wonder if Max maybe just did to Justin what Tony did to him. Tough. I mean, obviously, we're up I was just up. I'm excited talking about it. But when you think about the reality and the consequences of getting knocked out like that and going through a war like that, man, that's tough. But doesn't change the fact that Holloway's a fucking gangster, right? All right, moving on. Yan Xiaonan versus Zhang Weili for the strawweight title. I thought Yan fought a really good fight. I think she surprised Zhang Weili. I think she surprised her with how powerful she was. And she was also able to get the better of some of the wrestling exchanges and get out of some bad spots. But overall, I feel like what made the difference in this fight is that Yan Xiaonan continued to make mistakes. She would be in situations where she might be able to come up on top, maybe get the back, and she just got out of position and she would roll to the bottom and Zhang Weili was able to dominate from there. So the wrestling and the grappling definitely leaned towards Zhang Weili, but I'll tell you what, Zhang Weili was gassed for a while. Yan Xiaonan picked up a couple rounds in this fight. There were a couple rounds where she was looking really good, but like I said, just the inexperience, maybe fighting folks at this level for that long, making those tiny mistakes. Now that she's gone through it, I only expect that she'll come back better. It would not surprise me at all if we see Yan Xiaonan work her way back into title contention again. I thought it was a good performance and one that she just had to go through to realize what it takes to ascend to that next level. And Zhang Weili defending the throne once again, proving that she's one of the best female strawweights of all time. Main event time, Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill. And man, this is one, after seeing it, it almost felt like it was always going to go this way. Like maybe Jamahal Hill had a chance to land something, but overall, Pereira's just too good on the feet, man. Too good with the footwork, too good with the calf kicks, too good with managing the distance. And he gets kicked, he gets low-shotted, he pushes Herb Dean off. Jamahal kind of starts reset, and he just brings the left hook. It's crazy how powerful that left hook is. It just fucking sleeps people. It slept Yuri. Right? It slept fucking Israel. It slept Jamahal Hill. And it makes you wonder what's next for Alex Pereira now. Is he going to move up and fight Tom Aspinall? You got the great performance that Jiří Procházka just had. I'd like to see those two fight again. I think that's a viable matchup, you know? So we'll see which way things go. Light heavyweight's pretty fun right now up at the top. You got a lot of guys who I feel like are capable of knocking each other out. And Poatan, the legend, continues to grow for him. But all right, that's going to wrap this one up, guys. Like I said, there's a breakdown out on the spinning kick and how Max was making the read against Justin that I just put out. I'm going to try to maybe get a breakdown out for Armon Sarukian and Oliveira going over some of the grappling exchanges in that fight, and then probably Kayla Harrison versus Holly Holm if I have time. So keep an eye out for those. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. Much appreciated. If you guys enjoyed, do me a favor, subscribe, like, all that good shit, and otherwise, I will catch you guys later. Have a great day. Bye-bye.